Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
155 years of post-Confederacy life can fall apart with a rival's ranking. That is the change. The driver of change.
Pete Thamel.
The pandemic is weakening the humans and the animals are starting to slowly take their turn.
And SI's Pat 40.
This is it. This is could be the tipping point. We've been warning people for years.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. It is the last week of June. And throughout this pandemic, we continued to point to July 1st as a day college football would have to figure out what was going to happen. Seemed like a reasonable time. Now, maybe you can go a little longer, maybe not. I don't know. But July, we are coming rather close now. Our hopes of like, hey, things will change in 2 months or something will come up or, hey, maybe they'll figure out a treatment that'll do this. Lots of things have changed. There have been some improvements. There have been some setbacks. There has been some non-movement on different things. But we are getting close now to when. How does this thing get rolling, really? And those days are coming quicker. So no better time than to continue this discussion of, I think we're going to have a season, but what kind of season? Continually getting reports this week, Texas A&M, others of positive tests on players. None of that is a surprise. Seeing a surge in positive tests around the country with an emphasis on the number of young people getting coronavirus. It's felt inevitable. Don't know whether that's going to become some kind of massive tragedy or no big deal or a moderately big deal. Hard to say. We did see in a story in The Athletic just on Thursday that there's a lot of discussion about pushing back conference title games a extra week. So essentially into what would be the second Saturday of December in an effort to leave an open week in case of canceled games. Now, that's probably a very good long-term planning out strategic thing to do. So you're not caught flat-footed. However, from my seat, it's like gulp. Does that mean we're going to have canceled games? Do they think some of these games are going to be canceled? How crazy is all this? So again, I think it's going to be a really dicey run for the next X number of things. I think I saw, I can't remember who tweeted it out, but the plan of the college football playoff, how is that going to work? Now you're getting into December and January when colleges are saying they can't even be open. And they're saying that now. Hopefully they're overreacting, but we don't know. Someone said the college football playoff committee is still going to meet in person every week.
Great.
The allegiance to these meetings of the conference.
Yeah. I mean,
first thing
gosh,
that could go.
Of all meetings you want to get out of. And you
queso
could get
is a
out
hell
of
a drug.
Yeah,
queso and margaritas. Like, what else could they say?
Even like late April, Mike Gundy, who would say, "Yeah, we probably don't need to have a meeting every week." Like, even even someone who thinks this is a hoax and is not really exist would probably be like, "Yeah, just just for sake, we probably can skip that. You can do that on Zoom, right?"
OAN anchors would agree that you should just probably get on Zoom.
Just don't have the meetings. We didn't need them in the first place. Anyway, so you get literally everything from we're still meeting for 6-8 weeks to, oh boy, we better set in some gap weeks because this Jenga tower of a season is going to fall apart and we're not going to know who won the Big Ten West. So, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to play like all of a sudden you're going to redo, like make sure that Minnesota Michigan State game gets played in like December, 9th or I don't know, whatever the date is.
Yeah. Where we are at, we are not far enough to have a lot of confidence, I don't think, for July 1st. And so I think it is kick the can further down the road and start laying plans for things to go wrong. I do. I think that that's where we're at is I don't see schools, that, as you said, one of the things about leaving this open date is a presumption of canceled games. And I think that's a very high likelihood. Did a story earlier this week. The Patriot League has all but come out and said, we are not playing non-conference football. And while that's only the Patriot League, it does affect several FBS schools that they will be playing. And I think that's just the start. There's going to be other leagues, probably especially the quote unquote smaller ones, that are going to look and say, okay, not only safety concerns, but cost measurements. What are we going to be doing here? Are we really going to, is this a good idea to play or not? And they'll probably pull back. And the more games get canceled, the more things get pushed back. And I think that open date will be used if people are healthy, if we're healthy enough to still have a season. So I think that's happening. It's so interesting. I mean, there's still these divergent mindsets of, you know, yeah, we're going ahead, we're selling tickets, we're doing this, we're doing that. I just went to a press conference this morning, Churchill Downs. We are not only having the Kentucky Derby on September 5th, we're selling tickets for that. We will have fans, including in the infield, which is kind of hard to fathom. And then you've got people that are like, no, I mean, we're not even sure we're going to play. We're not even sure we're going to do anything. So I think it's all over the board still, and we're getting to a point where it's very difficult to be all over the board. So I've heard, you know, in passing and talking to some people, that the next 3 to 4 weeks are just vital, basically, to see what the state of things are. And then you got to start with the school presidents. What's their stomach for this? Do they still want to go forward with football? Are they still going forward with students on campus? You know, do you want to take on all of the inherent potential risk and controversy of mass gatherings at something like football, in addition to just the players themselves playing? So where are we? I don't know, Dan. I have no idea where we are.
Great analysis. That's why you tune into this podcast.
For me to talk to get that kind of insider information of I don't know.
Good work. Good chat. Thank Pat. Thank you. Could have just said that at the beginning and not saved us the buildup.
Whatever.
Pete, you know anything?
I don't. I do know that the Boston Globe sitting next to me on my couch that got delivered to my driveway this morning says U.S. cases set daily record. That's today, June 25th, 2020. All right. So if U.S. cases are setting daily records right now, here's what I wrote on Yahoo on Thursday, and I feel very strongly about. We need to take a long, hard look at playing this thing in the spring. And I'm not saying move it, but I'm saying is the early results, voluntary workouts, 10 at a time, well-spaced. You have outbreaks everywhere across the country. Clemson now reports to Texas A&M, Kansas State, Houston shut down their workouts. What's going to happen when you actually practice? When the guys actually are next to each other, when they're in the locker room every day? What's going to happen when 10,000 students come back to campus? Do we think we're going to have less cases of the coronavirus? No, we're going to have more. And the unpredictability of when you get it, how you get it, and then how it's spread just makes this season is going straight into a buzzsaw right now. And I've never been more convinced of it than the past few days. I talked to three Power Five coaches in the last few days who basically, one said, I have no idea how we play. The other one said, if it's contact tracing and lose a guy for 14 days, I don't know how we're going to have a football season. And another one who I asked, like, what are the chances of you playing 12 games this year? And he said, close to 0%. So if we are actually pondering an extra week cushion for the conference title games because of canceled games, and I've heard rumblings about dynamic scheduling where if, like, Louisville gets 15 positive cases on Saturday, they can replace them with this team that has a bye and they can jump in. Like, if you're doing these kinds of things, it's completely negligent for the leaders in college football to have not modeled out and taking a long, hard look at playing in the spring. Dr. Fauci has come out and said that there's a reasonable chance that there's some vaccines available. You start the season the week after the Super Bowl or somewhere around the Super Bowl and you go. And I really think that, like, in talking to some other ADs and coaches this week, they're like, well, Dr. Fauci, he's been wrong. He's been flip-flopping. And I'm like, really? Like, just because I played Operation doesn't mean I can do heart surgery. You know, like, look at the data. Look at the stats. Look at where we're going right now. And I just see no clear, reasonable path to having a functional college football season. So if you play in the spring and you move it, you are likely giving players a better chance to be healthy, which should be the main concern here. You are giving your schools an opportunity to potentially, if there's a vaccine, play with fans in the stand. So you're upping income by tens of millions of dollars. And you're actually giving yourself a chance to play the whole season. Like, I just think that I see very little hope right now for any kind of, I just think that everyone's just going blindly and myopically into like, what's our voluntary practice plan? What? And they're not looking at the big picture, which is just, this is going to be a disaster.
I think, you know, I think it's important to note, it's like, for some reason, and I get that, I get it, but deaths is like the stat, like, well, look, deaths aren't up, or you're unlikely to die, highly unlikely to die if you're 21 and you catch this thing. Okay, that's great. Good. That's we're all good for that. But we're just trying as a practical matter. Like, the NBA is terrified of the coronavirus. I'd be willing to pretty much bet it all that if LeBron James gets the coronavirus, he will survive. If the coronavirus can take out that guy, who may be like Earth's best physical specimen, then we're all dying. Oh. Right. So it's not about whether you're going to die or you're going to have to go into a coma. I don't think that's the case. It's what the NBA is terrified of is they get sick right before a playoff series and the whole series falls apart. And just as a logistic in football, you can't just call up another guy. You only have so many players on your team. They're, you know, like, they're doing this with baseball. They're trying to, like, what if three starting pitching rotations out for 2 weeks? Well, you know, we're going to have some guys on a practice squad, or we're going to keep dudes are going to, you know, there'll always be dudes ready to go. Jump in, throw the ball. What do you do in college football? And how do you do this? My joke about getting every, like, we're just going with a herd immunity is probably a strat, is actually, was an actual strategy. One that
I've been hearing more and more of that, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Wetzel plan.
It started as a joke, and now it's like, oh, well, you know.
Right.
But even if you do that, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. This is going to be really, really tricky because you're just going to lose games. And when one game goes down, what happens if someone's 8-0? What happens if some of these teams don't really play that many, like, tough games, you know? So it's all of a sudden, like, you know, you got an easy non-con schedule, and then all of a sudden your two tough games in a conference are out, and hey, oh, wait, we're 10-0. You beat, you know, the ultimate who'd you play. I don't know. This is going to be super, super tricky. The problem with going spring is, I mean, all your best players aren't going to play. They're going to go to the NFL.
Yeah. A lot of them bail out. You're looking at some very adverse weather situations. If you're playing in February, you're trampling over basketball, which may just be the way it needs to be, as we're already looking at. I mean, the sports are going to be trampling all over each other this fall if they actually get played. So that would not necessarily be different in the except for the fact that the colleges are alleged, you know, caretakers of both football and basketball. You know, like the NFL doesn't care about the Masters or baseball or any of that. But the colleges are supposed to care about all their sports. So that is a consideration.
June Madness.
Might be. But you want to talk about players that aren't going to play college basketball. They don't want to play to begin with. You tell them you got to play into June and then there's a draft. No, they're not playing.
If that college basketball season doesn't start on time, all those draft picks are out. They'll train.
The good thing is there really aren't that many draft picks in college basketball anymore. Well, so.
Yeah, but they all think they are. They all think.
Yeah.
Yeah. This last couple of days wasn't good. So, you know, the number of cases is surging.
Yeah.
And again, we're not saying that the country's going to, you know, be doomed or you need to sit alone in a darkened room wearing a mask all by yourself. But it takes it. What we found when we shut down the country is it took like 3 weeks plus to flatten the curve under the best of circumstances. And no one's shutting down the country again. So.
Yeah. No.
Do the math. And I know we're not big on math here, but. Hard to imagine that all of a sudden by mid-August, it's like when all the college kids come back, we'll be good. Won't be a problem. Very, very, very tricky.
It is going to be, you know, it's going to be a real test of what are universities willing to risk or put up with. And again, that goes to the top. That goes to the presidents. That's past the ADs and past the football coaches. And, you know, they were pretty quick to get things shut down back in March. From a presidential level. And it's instructive. One of the reasons that the Patriot League enough also could be a canary in the coal mine, you know, they're pretty like-minded to the Ivy League. And I would not be surprised at all to see the Ivy League do away with non-conference football if they play football at all. And in March, the Ivy League shut down everything first. And we're all like, holy cow, they're crazy. They ended up being right. Now, this is different circumstances now in the fall, and people know more, and maybe they're more willing to accept a risk or whatever. But I say watch what the eggheads do, and might see what everybody else does.
Bowdoin College in Maine, it plays in the NESCAC Division III school. They just wiped the slate clean, not playing. And yeah, I do think we are going to see more of that, not less of it, in the upcoming weeks. It's just daunting to imagine, unless your entire team has the virus, gets it, remains immune to it, just this season not unfolding the way it's trending right now, with significant cancellations, complications. Death sounds so extreme, and I know what the statistics are, like Dan said, but like, what if you have an immunocompromised guy? What if someone ends up on a ventilator? Like that, these are the scenarios we're just trending towards right now. And it just doesn't seem like the people are really thinking from 30,000 feet.
The PR hit of that will be bad, but they are bringing the kids back to school. I just think as a number one thing I hear is just what happens if, and it's not even an if, it's like,
yeah, when.
What happens if our defensive secondary gets the coronavirus? Yeah. Well, they're going to.
Yeah.
Like, how exactly are we not going to? How are they not getting it? I mean,
that's one thing. I mean, the administrators said a month ago, and they were right, this season ain't going to be fair. You know, I don't want to hear that's the kind of thing. Look, it'd be terrible if you lose your secondary before you play a game. It'd be awful. And you feel bad for the players, but that's going to be the way it is if we play. You know, there are going to be major virus-related imbalances in what happens this season. So everybody's going to just have to resign themselves to that going in.
You'd basically have to say, we're going to play even if you got it.
Yeah,
right. You know, because you're probably asymptomatic or whatever, and you're just going to play. I don't believe a local health official will allow that, but I don't.
Right. Yeah.
I think there's one thing. Like, if this wasn't about money, they wouldn't be doing it.
Right. No.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, no one's sitting there worried about like some fifth grade volleyball team playing in the fall. No. It's like, we may not have it this year, or even high school. Like, there was a lot of people sad about it and it was disappointing, but they pretty much canceled the high school sports really quickly.
Yeah.
Because in the spring, because there isn't a lot of money in it. And then maybe in football it'll be harder, maybe. But, you know, and obviously you felt bad for the kids that lost their seasons. And there was a lot, but it was sort of like, what are you going to do? It's a pandemic. We can't do this. So, all right, I wanted to get one more story here on, more college football, but Pete's story on this week on Mike Gundy, I thought was pretty interesting, very interesting, and how it was a lot more, I'll let Pete explain it, but it was a lot more than just the OAN shirt, his cable preferences, his cable bill is not. Coach Gundy's got a lot of issues with his team. There was a follow-up story in the Tulsa World by Bill Haston. Does good work there. And I thought this was pretty interesting. He said in his column, which kind of confirmed a lot of the disconnect that the athletic department really feels is a disconnect between Gundy and his players, is in advance of what would be his 30th season with the OSU program. Now, some of that was when he was a player. And an assistant coach. Will the 52-year-old Gundy be fired? I don't know, because apparently no one knows, Bill wrote. It hasn't been determined, I'm told. Apparently it's still a discussion at the highest levels of Oklahoma State pyramid. What he's hearing is there's a 30% possibility of dismissal, 70% likelihood he'll return. I think he probably survives and returns in part because of what he said to Pete and some of the steps he is taking. But recap a little bit of what you had in your article, which I thought was really good. And then my question is to all of us is do we think like Gundy probably just should have changed? He looks like a guy who's not motivated right now and a little distant. Like, he probably would have been better if he had gone to Tennessee a couple years ago or taken another job when he had the opportunity. It's like, it's hard to be a head coach at the same school for 15 plus years, and he's going into season 16.
Yeah, well, to start, you know, the point of the article was to just take a look at, you know, the simmering discontent in the program that led to both Chuba Hubbard's tweet and unanimous support from his teammates when he did come out. And from calling around and talking to players, talking to families, talking to people around the program, I mean, it was unanimous that Gundy was just completely disconnected. Like, I can't tell you how many people said, like, a huge point of discontention was just Gundy didn't know players' names, and not just the walk-on Anthony Diaz who almost died on the field. Your regular scholarship players, Mike Gundy just was so disconnected that he didn't bother knowing their names. It was a fundamental lack of respect, really. That, like, here's this guy making $5 million a year, and he's not even engaged enough to acknowledge us by our names in a press conference. He's calling me number 11. In the press conference. And so that disconnect was fairly glaring. And Oklahoma State, in their public comments and in Gundy's comments, embraced that. And I think part of them embracing that was that Gundy just sort of being an aloof oaf was a lot better than the narrative that was the week before, which was Gundy's a racist. So it was interesting to see how it obviously all the aloof stuff was real and it was happening. But that was the better course of action for Gundy and Oklahoma State to attach itself to than the Alfred Williams allegation that resurfaced, obviously, and then obviously his ties to OAN. And remember, this is all happening when a Trump rally comes to Tulsa on Saturday, you know, which is essentially the nearest biggest city to Stillwater, kind of equidistant to Oklahoma City. But like that, you know, that like it's a political cauldron the state is at that point. So there was no one of the Oklahoma State officials I talked to in the people there who even tried to pretend like Mike Gundy was locked in with the team. You go through like the timeline of he has the April 7th, I believe, like the infamous coronavirus press conference where he wants to run money through the state and bring guys back. And then 2 weeks later, the players get a text that their stipends are going away and they're not going to have access. Some of them aren't going to have access to their summer school classes. So, like, wait a minute. This guy wants us to rush back and risk our health. He has some assistant ops guy text us, doesn't get on a Zoom and talk to us about it. So you can see, like, as the timeline goes, the simmering discontent. So the players in the holistic reality of this did not get screwed, but they had to live with the tension growing of their coach not talking to them on Zoom, an underling announcing it to them, and then the uncertainty that came with their financial situations. A lot of players take Pell Grant money and send it home. Like, that's a very common thing in college sports. So all this festered and all this built, and Gundy refused to take a pay cut, so the school couldn't really announce pay cuts because it would look terrible if Gundy didn't take one and Mike Boynton did and Mike Holder did. And so, by the way, it's really confusing that all three coaches at Oklahoma, all three primary figures at Oklahoma State are named Mike, but that's another point for another time. And so Oklahoma State is going to do massive pay cuts eventually once they realize how financially sideways they are in the fall. But like just as that timeline unfolded, which is poor leadership on the school's part for not realizing it, poor leadership on Gundy's part for not communicating it, we landed where we did. And that eventually were some of the things that built up to Chuba's tweet and his support of it.
It's never a good thing if the best option you have is to be portrayed as an aloof oaf. If that's the good option, then the bad options were really bad for Gundy. Now, it's a great story, and it really did dig into a situation of, I think, a guy who, as Dan alluded to, maybe too comfortable, too big, too arrogant, been there too long, starts pulling away, disconnecting, like, what are they going to do, fire me? I'm winning 8 games every year. They're not going to fire me. I don't need to know who the players are. You get a little bit older, you lose kind of your natural touch with younger people. And I think all those things were probably combination factors. And yeah, he might have been better off getting change of scenery at some point in time and going elsewhere. He had chances. He tried to get other jobs. He tried to get Arkansas when they hired Bielema. And he's probably right that Oklahoma State doesn't want to fire him. As Dan said, 70% likelihood that he keeps a job. That sounds about right to me. But hopefully this is the kind of the reality check that gets him back in touch with his program.
Could he get a job anywhere else?
Not now. Not now.
Not the kind of job that would be like, I think the problem is you take over in Oklahoma State and he, you know, he's 4-7 in his first year and he builds it up slowly. 7-6, 7-6, 9-4, 9-4, 11-2, the 2011 team, 12-1, had a real shot at the title game. Fades back, but you know, then has a stretch of 10 wins for the next 5 years. They're doing well. I'm sure at one point he thought, I'm going to overcome Oklahoma. I'm going to be the best, you know, and that reality hits, you're 3-12. Oklahoma, they don't ever go away. That's why they're Oklahoma. So you almost like, it's really hard to be a head coach at the same school for a long time. You know, you look at Saban, right? He's been at three schools and that, and took an NFL job, and those recharging and those new challenges, you know, are really good. What if Nick Saban stays at Michigan State all these years? Like, it's really hard. So if you were going to leave Oklahoma State, say, I want to go somewhere where I could be the top dog in the league. And Oklahoma State just doesn't quite have that history and those resources. And until T. Boone came along, they didn't have the facilities to make that jump. But now where are you going to go? Because you're not going to get one of those top 5-6 SEC jobs, or he's just not at this point. So he's kind of in a tough spot. So I think Mike Gundy has shown he has capability of getting Oklahoma State to be really, really good. Top 15 in the country. Even top 5 one year, but consistently top 20, top 15. Does this jolt him back to that level of connection with his players, work ethic, recruiting, all of the things that he apparently, as he admitted, he had started fading on to get the Cowboy program back? Because they're 7-6, 8-5 the last 2 years. This year, obviously, is going to be, who the heck knows what the season's going to be. It's going to screw up all of our, like, you know, like the historical noting of being like 10 win seasons.
Right.
Well, he only won 6. Well, he won 6-2. You know, it's going to screw all us up on this. But what I really liked about the story was it wasn't just like this, you know, everyone yelling at Mike Gundy. It was like, this is pretty interesting. Like, this may actually jolt his career, because he can be, for all us, you can hate him or you can like him, but he's a good coach. I mean, mm-hmm. It's not easy to win 10 games. 3 straight years at Oklahoma State, or get them in that connection. So maybe he can bring that back, or maybe all of this hurts recruiting enough that he can't get there. I don't know, but it's a fascinating a spot for him. All right, here's a story this podcast is built for. This is the best Louisville versus Kentucky scrap since those two guys fought at the dialysis clinic. Two old dudes at the dialysis clinic smacking on each other over the cards and the cats.
Oh, yeah. That's the ultimate card cat story. But this one's a pretty darn good one.
Did Denny Crum or Eddie Sutton cheat more? <There's> bags. <fire.
laughs> It's time. Yeah. In this corner, Christy Hester Mack, wife of Coach Mack of Louisville, basketball coach. In this other corner, Dr. Erin Calipari, daughter of Coach Calipari of Kentucky. We have a wife versus daughter social media fight. Why the hell not? Yes. In June. This is, the rivalry is so great. Christy Mack seemed to favor a post on, I don't know, was this Facebook or some social media? Yeah,
Facebook.
From a woman named Kristen Stevenson, who is a long post. I'm not going to bore you with it. It sort of brought up, I don't understand why we have these protests are okay with social distancing, and you need a mask, and I don't know, different stuff like this. And where's the, it's just is what it is. I don't want to get into it. I'm not making a statement on the, I'm not giving a thumbs up or thumbs down to the opinion, but it is you know, are the protests essential? What's going on? Are we supporting police and all that? Christy Mack put three emojis of a hand pointing at the post. So that seemed to be like this, right? I think that's mm-hmm. what that stands for.
Yep.
Gotta decipher. Damn, hieroglyphics. We gotta decipher these things. I don't even know. I don't want to quirk. I don't want to read this like opus that this other woman put out, but I don't know. I'm probably mischaracterizing
it. No, you characterized it well, because I did.
All right, whatever, man.
You did. I'm gonna characterize well.
I don't. Someone's card fans are going to start yelling at me, or cat fans. I don't know.
Oh, they will. Anyway. It doesn't matter. Trust me. It does not matter how you characterize it. They will yell at you.
They all hate me. Whatever. Anyway. Dr. Calipari. She is a clinical. She does like research on how. So her Twitter bio is Dr. Calipari, but she does research on how addiction works down at Vanderbilt. Yeah, very important work. Erin Calipari. Sorry, we're not going to call you doctor for this because it's too confusing. She posts on, I believe, Twitter.
Yep.
At Coach Chris Mack. You may want to have a talk with your wife about. That's never a good way to start.
That is a straight like Molotov cocktail throw, right?
That's a drop the gloves before the other guy's still holding his stick. You may want to have a talk with your wife. No husband wants to have that talk. I don't even know what follows. You may want to have a talk with your wife about how this looks to your basketball players. An innocent black woman was killed in her home by police in your town, and she's worried about if the police are okay. And so off it went. Now, I believe that tweet was, I have to do some forensics here. I believe that was taken down, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
There were many tweets. She did not just tweet that one. It became then her justifying that, and then it became her saying, I'm deleting my mentions. I'm not going to even listen. Then it became she just took it all down. It was an avalanche that came very quickly and rather predictably after that tweet.
So were the sides drawn between the Cardinal fans and the Cats?
Well,
or just it's like Paul. I mean, not every Cat fan is on this side of the political aisle, and not. I mean, you know, you think there's some crossover, but maybe not in this case.
No, there was definitely some crossover that I saw. This was my fundamental error in this, although I was highly just entertained by the whole thing, as we all were. You know, I tweeted that if you thought that maybe the rivalry was losing steam, here's your proof that it wasn't. And then, oh my gosh, it was off and just flying. Now, there were some Kentucky fans who are conservative, who don't want to hear from a loudmouth liberal, even if she is the daughter of the coach. There are some more liberal-minded Louisville fans who don't want to see Christy Mack taking the side that she was espousing there. So there was some of that, but mostly what there was, your coach is an awful human being. No, your coach is an awful human being. Your school cheats. No, your school cheats. The coach that's named on your arena is a racist. I mean, it was a complete meltdown, and it just became my tribe is morally superior to your tribe. And it was classic Kentucky Louisville. And that's about once a year in the off season, something will happen where it's like you just go like that. Like you said, before you even drop the stick, the gloves are off. It's like you go from a civil disagreement to I want to shoot you. Basically. I mean, that's what it's like. Well, about once a year. This is that time. And it often happens in the summer because it's boring in Kentucky and nothing's going on. That's why it's a rivalry.
I think, you know, open forum, like the more chaos, the better, the more made for pod programming, the better. Like this was immediately identified by our listeners as something like right directly in our wheelhouse. I especially enjoyed it because I know that Dr. Calipari, Erin, I believe.
Yes, Erin.
Has had some choice hot takes on our very own Pat 40. So,
you think?
So we know she has good taste already. If she's prone to annihilate Pat on Twitter. So yes, you could see the same piss and vinegar we saw in John when he was at UMass, like sticking his middle finger up to Jim Calhoun and the rest of the establishment has gone down through his family. But like a classic, quintessential modern social media fight that never would have happened in the 90s. You know what I mean? Like those people would even recognize each other in public in the 90s.
No, they'd be on talk radio then in the 90s.
Yes.
It's a similar fight. But the thing that obviously ratchets it up is when it's family going after family. And yes. Erin Calipari is so far out of bounds here that, I mean, it is pretty amazing. And the Calipari in the past has said, I don't want I try to get my daughters to stay out of that stuff. I don't think he's trying that hard because they keep doing it. So the proof's in the pudding. If they
can't control them,
if they show you who they are, believe them.
He can cut their scholarship checks.
Dr. Calipari is not going to take crap from anybody.
Apparently not.
She wasn't even
taking crap, though. She started the crap. That's the thing.
Well, she's going to drop the gloves. Like I said, she saw some. She definitely escalated it. I mean, there's no question. You could disagree with someone's political opinion or opinion on this, but she went right after, went right to the husband. Didn't even address.
Don't go to the husband. You got a problem. Take it to Christy Mack on Facebook.
I'm going to be nice to Dr. Calipari. I don't need her coming after me. Smart. It was a good fight, though. We'll take it. So if you want to keep at it, go ahead.
Oh, they are still. I'm still like every 15 minutes on my phone. Like somebody, some Cardinal fan is screaming at some cat fan or vice versa.
All right. Here's a quick update on a story we had. Kylan Hill, the Mississippi State player, said he wasn't going to play for the Bulldogs this year unless the state of Mississippi got the Confederate flag out of its own state flag. I think that's how I would phrase it. There's too many. These stories are too complicated. These are like lightning rods. I feel like I'm going to get screamed at for it's not the Confederate. It's like whatever it is. The image of the Confederate flag inside the Mississippi State flag, the state of Mississippi flag is still there. But on Thursday, virtually every single football and basketball coach, certainly all of them at Ole Miss and Mississippi State, they finally found something they could agree on.
That is notable.
This alone is newsworthy. Yeah. All went down to Jackson, Mississippi and met with the state legislature, lobbied on this. And I think they're telling them recruiting's going to hurt. It always goes back to recruiting.
Sure.
If nothing will cause people to change their political opinions more than if they think this might cost them a three-star linebacker from Stone Mountain, Georgia. 155 years of post-Confederacy life can fall apart with a rival's ranking. 24/7 composite. That is the change. The driver of change. I can't recruit. Coach can't recruit. Gotta go. Sorry, Confederacy. This might stomp out the Confederacy a little bit.
It might.
Can you believe it? Mike Leach and Lane Kiffin are holding hands down in Jackson.
How about that? Both want to be on the right side of an issue that could, the outside linebacker from Pascagoula is watching. He wants to know.
Well, good for Kylan Hill, right? Like, a very good player, poised for a very big year, just goes out there and puts his, there's a vulnerability that comes with that. Because now all of a sudden, your school in your state makes a value judgment on you essentially and says, well, is it, worth this guy essentially playing, to change something that, for decades has been the symbol of hatred in our state. So fascinating. And like, we have seen so many impressive things from different players through all this in the social justice movement, be it Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins at Clemson. There have been years worth of progress in a month, essentially. And again, hopefully it's just a start. We certainly want more, but Kylan Hill, that's a big thing he's taken on. I mean, Chuba Hubbard took on his head coach, and that was a big deal. But this goes a lot bigger and deeper than your coach.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt he probably has a lot of support, but he also has a lot of backlash. I mean, there's a reason that flag is still the flag in Mississippi, because there is a significant number of people that do not want to let go of it, and that's why the state legislatures are like, well, we'll try to get this done, but I don't know whether we can get this done. It is such a politically hot topic. I mean, to me, it's a terrible commentary on Mississippi, not the whole state, but enough of a part of the population that you could be so resistant to changing something like that. But that's the facts. And so Kylan Hill did step out in a fairly precarious position.
Let me just add quick, Dan, one of the interesting reverberations from, living in the Oklahoma State orbit the past couple of days reporting that story is that one of the things that the players did say that was just a striking reverberation to them was how many fans like showed their true colors, and they did not like what the fans had to say, just in terms of like the fans calling out the players for what they did with Chuba, calling Mike Gundy's OAN shirt unacceptable. Like the players themselves got a peek into the fan base's soul, and they did not like what they saw.
I mean, the fan base of college football is conservative in mm-hmm. huge numbers. So, yep. And also the ones that are going to scream are the loudest. They're the loudest. Like the one that goes, he's got a point. That guy just goes about his business. Or I moderately agree. Yeah. He's not.
Yeah, those people don't grab a bullhorn to say I'm moderately agree.
Yeah, and so I think that's part of it too. I mean, I think a lot of people just like, yeah, you know what? Probably shouldn't have worn that shirt, or maybe he should, or I'm not. Whenever I talk to people who are super political, they get mad at me sometimes. I'm like, eh, you know, doesn't really affect my life. This part, this one thing, I'm not offended by virtually anything. So one way or the other. But people get offended. They got, man, you say they're going to take down that flag and people are going to get triggered.
Yeah.
Or they're going to have opinions one way or another. So I just think it's fascinating that it very quickly, he was a catalyst, a big push, whether or not that flag goes away or not. I don't know, but Kylin Hill, that's what you call using your platform, if you will. All right, look, this is the biggest news in the world right now. It's not the coronavirus, I can tell you that. It's not. A tourist in Scotland who toured Scotland is claiming he has a picture of no less than the Loch Ness Monster.
No less.
The Loch Ness Monster. The keen amateur photographer took photos of the water and described what he saw as a big fish that came to the surface and quickly went back under. He was, what's this guy's name? Steve Chalice, told the UK's Daily Record, which is a newspaper of limited credibility, but whatever. Said he was on holiday last September when he spotted ripples at the Urquhart Castle, which is where the Loch Ness Monster apparently lives. But he did not check his photos until the pandemic. And that's when he noticed this whale-looking thing coming up in the lake, and put it on internet, and everything went wild. And now people really think that the Loch Ness Monster is around. I, for one, think this photo is completely doctored and totally ridiculous and not true. However, I want it to be true, so I'm just gonna in modern fashion. Clearly, the Loch Ness Monster exists. And this absurd photo is proof. Pete, your thoughts. Is there a Loch Ness Monster out there?
Of course there is. My God. You know, I mean, if you look at that photo, like, that's not exactly like the fish Pat's holding in his Twitter profile. You know, like, oh, look at the little striper I caught on the lake. No, that thing is a monster. It is a literal monster. The Loch Ness Monster exists, and damn your skepticism, Dan Wetzel. We need a distraction right now. Don't be skeptical of the opportunity for some paranormal activity to be happening in Scotland. And Pat, I believe you've covered golf in Scotland, correct?
I have, yes.
Did you search for the Loch Ness Monster while you're there? And if you haven't, you're negligent.
I stayed at a golf course that had a pond. And I looked, and I didn't see him. So, you know, one day when I was going out to my car to drive to the course, okay. So that was the extent of my search. The photo is completely bogus. The newspaper is completely bogus. Last September, you took a picture of something like that. Oh, and you didn't notice until 10 months later. I think it might have stuck out when you were taking the picture. Like, what in the hell is that behemoth down there in the water? It's doctored. It's fake. You should have gone to the Glasgow Times or something. If you think you got a good Scotland story, go to the newspaper of highly questionable authenticity, as Dan pointed out. Is there a Loch Ness Monster? Yes, of course there is. And he's smart. He's damn smart. And that's why he hadn't been caught for this long. You know, he's been around for a century. He's old. He's wily. He's cagey. He lets these things run wild out there, but he is never caught.
He really is. He's like Barry Sanders in the open field. Just possible to. It's like a wet bar of soap. What does he do? He just swims on the bottom just for like 20, 30 years on end. He's got incredible lung capacity.
Yes. He's a fish.
I bet he has sophisticated tuna opinions.
Yeah.
Probably does.
Man, the star-kissed or the chicken of the. Which one? Oh, it was Bumblebee. Bumblebee was the real villain.
Bumblebee.
Yep. They're like, man, there's a lot of cans out of that guy. I hope he's real. I just, you know, so as far as I'm concerned, that's his new. That's it. Way to go. Is Loch Ness Monster the one that they call him Nelly, right? Nelly?
Yeah. Nessie.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep. I'm more of a, you know, a Bigfoot guy than the Loch Ness.
Remember, we've had
maybe that can be UNLV's new mascot. They replaced Hey Reb with Nessie.
There you go.
There's a lot of water. I mean, by the Hoover Dam, maybe.
Yeah, you never know. We've had some good Bigfoot discussions in the past in various iterations of podcasts and radio shows. I know that. We will again.
All right. This is a public service warning for everybody. I know travel is limited due to the virus and all, but if you were going to Thailand anyway, wear a mask on the flight very long. But if you go to the city of Lop Buri, I have an updated situation from the streets of Lop Duri, Thailand.
Travel advisory.
We have a lot of podcast listeners there. Yeah, so that's really important.
We're alerted to this. Residents are barricaded indoors. This is according to the Daily Mail in England. And the English papers, that's really throwing them all out there. So fun being in best parts of the London Olympics back in
reading those.
The tabs were still big then. They've faded in years, but yeah. I just get up and buy a couple of those things and have my coffee and
read them. Total micro thing that happened. They build up into an international incident.
Yeah, that's the best. Good times. Anyway, Daily Mail was one of my favorites. Residents are barricaded indoors. Gang wars are on the street, and there are no-go zones in the city. And not because of drug cartels or anything like that. It is because some 6,000 monkeys that live in the city and for years have attracted tourists who feed them fruit and take pictures of them. Uh-huh. Due to the lockdowns, there are no tourists, which means the monkeys are running short on food, turning them violent, and leaving locals struggling to control. The primates were pictured getting into a massive brawl in March over bananas. People have since taken to feeding them junk food in an attempt to keep the peace. But many believe the sugary diet has termed them sex crazed. And that they are now breeding faster than before.
Oh, my God.
The pictures here are insane. There's
video.
Just stacks of monkeys insane. Fighting. Yes.
Yeah.
Going at, like, there's one picture. This poor woman's driving through on a moped. And there's like, I mean, this is menacing. This is, this is what we're talking about. This is what we've been talking about. There's 10 monkeys ready to jump this lady.
This is it.
The pandemic is weakening the humans, and the animals are starting to slowly take their turf.
This is it. This is could be the tipping point. We've been warning people for years.
Do not feed them junk food, Doritos, and there is excrement everywhere. The smell is unbearable, especially when it rains. This is true. Sex crazed monkeys in Thailand. What are we going to do, Pat? I mean, they can't swim, can they? Can they get to us?
Hey, don't put it past them.
Don't lock this monster. Give him a ride on his back. He gets over there. And
there you go. See? You want to talk about a conspiracy. That's it. Nessie joins forces with the sex-crazed battle monkeys of Thailand. And here they come. Yes, I think we should be very concerned. Look, the virus made it from Asia over here. So can the monkeys. Don't discount them.
And yeah, next thing you know it, the monkeys are going to strap 30 killer hornets together and come on over here.
Fight back.
They might need more than 30 million. But look, Thailand, long known for its sex trade. Now the monkeys have taken over that too, apparently. It's a dangerous situation. Very dangerous situation over there. Look out.
There goes our sponsorship with the Lobbery Chamber of Commerce. We were just about to get that home.
Locals say a sugary diet of fizzy drinks. Who's feeding them fizzy drinks?
They know my feelings on Diet Coke, so it's not me.
Here is the a manager of a local temple. The more they eat, the more energy they have, so they breed more.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Total mayhem.
Yeah. And later on in the article, they go on to say that by Friday, they went to neuter over 500 of these monkeys.
Whew. Really? Wow.
Oh, there's a job.
Rapid mass neutering. Yeah, that's no thank you. I don't want to be on that duty.
That sounds about as fun as being an NSA compliance director.
You think we got problems worrying about whether we're going to get a full 12-game regular season in.
Yeah, right.
All right, we'll be back next week. We're going to wrap up our 3 state of the conferences and other mayhem that goes on. We got the Big 10, the SEC, and the Big 12 to discuss. Pat and Pete did a good job with the ACC and Pac-12 earlier, but they're saving the big conferences because, you know, you need my opinion on this. And I hope everyone has a good, safe weekend. And we'll talk to you next week on July 4th week. Take care.
I'm Mike Lizikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Kleidman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, a podcast that not only breaks down the news, but also breaks news.
We deliver authoritative analysis while drawing intriguing historical parallels from our decades of covering D.C. scandals.
With our current focus on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, to the 2020 elections, we interview those helping to shape the stories.
So subscribe to and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at Skullduggery Pod.